It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
Cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money. Dollar bill, yo. Cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money. Dollar bill, yo. Cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money. Dollar bill, yo. Cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money. Dollar bill, yo.
This is Over Under 98.5. With Joe Murray and Dan Lifshatz, here are the Bankroll Boys. Who you got?
All right, we're live. We are live. You are looking live on the left for the people who are still confused. Actually, which is left and which is right. So I'll do this individually, Dan. I am Joe Murray. Let's see if I can find my name on here. I am Joe Murray. Hi, that's my face. And I am at Joey Murr. And then this. Oh, hang on. Let's get him.
You sound like Jamelia right now.
Hang on. And then this is Dub. Hang on. This is Dan Lifshatz.
There you go.
Of 98.5 The Sports Hub. At Dan Lifshatz. So while everybody gets going, we'll wrap it up. We'll ramp it up real quick. That is us. Oh, we're back. Okay, cool. And we are the Over Under 985 podcast. And it is the Elite Eight. And Dan, I despite some PPs, took Florida State. That one. That one didn't go well.
Not great.
But oral covered. What else do we have? And then Oregon last night, man. Again, Bill Walton said it all along. USC was the best team out of the Pac-12. So I'm going to start listening to him going forward. And then nobody thought you said, I'm sorry. If you But we finally got a buzzer beater, right? We haven't had a buzzer beater all tournament.
Well, we had a buzzer beater to tie, but unfortunately not win.
And by the way, what are we doing not fouling up three? What isn't that the rule now?
That should be just if you're a coach, you're up three, foul. Just take the foul. I mean, yeah, it's way more unlikely that you're going to hit the free throw, get the rebound, get a shot, or get foul. I mean, come on, just. Do what you need to do. Take the foul. It's like you're putting yourself in a bad situation if you allow them to even get that shot. So luckily they survived. They survived, but luckily. So, hey, win's a win. UCLA wins in overtime. Yeah. Good win for them. My amazingly beautiful Alabama tickets are gone. Just gone. Dustin.
Yeah, long story short, UCLA just hung in there, man, and they scored 40 points in the first half and did not score a basket for 7 minutes. And the free throws, I thought it was the free throws that killed Alabama long term. But, you know, for me, Baylor was my big hit, man. I had him for the game. I hit him the second half. And that was it for me. And then I had Oral Roberts, which they didn't win, but Syracuse, I think, I thought there was some belief there. I wasn't buying them second half. That was so Saturday was my good day, and then obviously Sunday, Gonzaga rolled, but the over didn't hit. And then obviously the two games last night. So we are on to the Elite Eight, which starts in an hour.
Yep.
Essentially 1 hour. So this podcast, we're going to break down the Elite Eight, the two games tonight, two games tomorrow, and then the Final Four. And then we're going to do a Major League Baseball preview. So my suggestion is if you have baseball questions, you should send them in. And then we will give you some answers there. But the first game in 1 hour is Oregon State versus Houston. I'm going to tell you right now, the games in this Elite Eight, I think the lines are too high. I mean, I don't know if Houston should be an 8-point favorite. I don't know. And we'll find out. We'll play the game and we'll see what's happening. The total's 129 right now. It opened at 131. I think Oregon State's got bigs, man. And I know Houston plays such great defense. I don't know about this matchup. This is why it's like truly like we do. These teams don't play. Dude, I looked at it. The last time they played was like 11 years ago. The final score was like 49-45.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very surprising Oregon State team that I thought the market was extremely incorrect about. Such as we saw, you know, Georgetown just get their shit pushed in early in the first round. I thought that this was very similar. Unfortunately, I was wrong, and Oregon State's made a hell of a run. Ethan Thompson has been really just something out of this world for Oregon State. That whole team has really played incredibly well. I do think that it ends tonight. I think that Houston is the better team. I think Houston's going to win this game. I don't really have a great feel on the spread. I will tell you, it does feel like the world is on Oregon State +8 tonight, which is a little scary. But it has been, you know, it has been the theme of this tournament where big dogs have not only covered, they've won outright. So we'll see what happens. You know, will Oregon State win tonight, win and cover? Will Arkansas win and cover? The two big dogs tonight. It's going to be interesting. I do like the total. Give me the under 129.5.
I'm on it. Let's do a double PP on that one.
There you go. So Joe and I are on the double PP, the under 129.5 in Oregon State. Listen, I joined on the Oregon State in the second half of that game. I thought they were the better team and I thought they were dominating. I will say the whole world really does feel, and I agree with my guy Open Brew Sports here, the whole world feels like they're on Oregon State tonight, but I don't blame you if you want to ride them. They have been paying out. You can't really get upset about this, you know, in regards to this game. It's scary. Houston has the ability to shut you down defensively, just shut you down. And everything, you know, the way that they play defense, Joe, is incredibly impressive. And what they did to Syracuse, who has been really, really strong shooting the free, what they did to Buddy Boeheim, it's interesting. I wonder if they're going to have the same point of attack with Ethan Thompson tonight and make others around them beat them. If they do, I think Houston could win this game going away. I do think it's going to be a low scoring game. Two good defensive teams we've seen. The Pac-12, obviously a conference that was underestimated in the regular season by a lot of people, including myself. I think we owe the Pac-12 an apology. Oregon was not great last night, but still, USC was fantastic. Oregon has been, you know, really, really a crazy, you know, story. UCLA has been a hell of a story, winning an extra game to get to where they are now. So it's been fun to watch these Pac-12 teams, I think, that were really underestimated across the board. And, you know, I'll definitely be one of the ones who owns up to that. But I do think that the buck stops here. Houston's going to have a chance to win this game. And I think they win big. So
both teams play defense. Like, that's why I think we took the under. 46 points, 5 of 23 from 3, only 5 assists. That's what Syracuse did against Houston. Syracuse had nothing against Houston, and I do want to compare the two teams for a minute. Like, they play the same type of offensive game. So I think this is going to be a struggle Now, I do think Oregon State might be able to shoot the three a little bit better. But the thing is this, the glass. Dude, Syracuse, I'll look up their total rebounds, but they only had five offensive rebounds in the game. Houston was all over the rebounding edge. And the reason why I kind of like Houston today, they've already had a gut check win, right? They played Rutgers. That was a gut check, man. Like, they got their scare. They came back and won. And now, you know, Houston's number one in the nation in field goal defensive percentage. They hold teams under 60 points per game. Like, think about that for a second here. Oregon State has not seen this. Has not seen this yet. I still think they keep it close, Dan. So I in my brain, I have a 67-60 final. And I know it's 8 points, right? I just think that these games are going to be a little bit tighter. So the spread's 8. I off top of what I see, the number, the total, and the spread, Houston wins the game. I think it's a 67-60 final.
So there's an account on Twitter called Shot Quality, and basically what it does is it measures the based upon the actual shots these teams take, who wins the game, how many points do they win it by, the average score. Oregon State right now has been, per the poor shot quality, the luckiest team in the tournament in the past 3 years. So based upon the Loyola game, Loyola Chicago wins that game 92% of the time. Oregon State wins that game 8% of the time. Oregon State won that game by 7. Per the shot quality chart, Loyola should average 75.96 points. Oregon State 59.13. So they should have won on average by 17 points. Crazy. It's crazy. Now, I'm not taking anything away from Oregon State here. That's not my point. I'm just merely pointing out the fact that Oregon State has been, may have been getting lucky with some of these buckets and really just hot, right? They've just been shooting really hot. I wonder, I mean, listen to this. Oregon State's past 3 games, their 3-point luck is crazy. This tournament, they've allowed an average of 22.8% from 3 while shooting an average of 38.7% from 3. That is not going to be sustainable. That's not going to last. I think it ends versus Houston tonight. I lean Houston. I do lean Houston with the points. It's scary. I know, but that's the way I'm going. However, to answer our buddy Nelson's question here, he has a Houston future plus 2,500. Should he look to hedge? This is a round too early for me. It is. It's a round too early for me. If you can make it through tonight, I think that is where you start hedging. I think you gotta wait to the final four, because I think if you want to dip into it a little bit, maybe take like $100 and you wanna throw it on there, fine. But I don't want to hedge that too much, because you still got 2 more games. You want to hedge that plus 2,500 off. So I would say very small hedge, if anything, very small. I think Houston has a good chance to win tonight.
I had Houston in this spot. I have them playing Baylor in the next round. So for me, it's right on track of where I thought they would be, considering the bracket is complete bust. But yeah, so I like Houston to win the game. I'm going under, Dan, with just that 8. I don't like the 8. I just don't like it. Not saying I like Oregon State. I just don't like 8. So I'm predicting 67-60, keeps us under the total, and the Beavers cover. That's just a slight prediction, but I think it's going to be low scoring. And it's the first game of the night, too, so to throw that there. You want to move on to Arkansas-Baylor?
Yes, sir. Let's move on to the late game. It is a late game, 10 o'clock Eastern, late game. So, I mean, I don't really know how many people are going to be watching this game. I'm going to try to watch the whole thing. I might fall asleep eventually, but we'll see. Arkansas, a 7.5-point dog, and the total in this one is 147.5. Baylor, to me, was really, really impressive in that second half versus Villanova, right? I mean, I think that we have to give props to Baylor and what they did in that second half. They dominated. They stopped shooting the three. They went to the hoop, and they attacked the rim, which is finally what they needed to do. Arkansas, on the other hand, I felt Arkansas played pretty well defensively. They couldn't get anything to fall. And to me, it was just, this was a team that I felt that they were the better team throughout the whole game. They just couldn't get anything to fall. And it sort of felt like the Albion Christian game earlier on, where they couldn't get anything to fall despite taking good shots. I thought Arkansas probably should have covered that game. I probably would make that 11 bet again in that situation. I know, obviously, they win by two and barely. I would still feel comfortable making that bet in that same situation. Arkansas put up 85, then 68, then 72. They've shown you different ways they can win, but Texas Tech and Oral Roberts have been very close. However, Baylor has been real bad in their first half. So they were fine versus Wisconsin, but Hartford, they struggled. They were not good in that first half. They were terrible versus Villanova. If they have struggled in the first half here today, Joe Murray, they're going home, because Arkansas is not going to allow them to get back into the game. Arkansas is the team that's been fighting and scrapping for their lives. I have a feeling we'll see that again. I don't think they're going to win tonight, but I do like Arkansas to cover this number. I think this number is too big at 7.5, especially if it gets up to 8. I think Arkansas is going to be able to score on Baylor. I think Baylor will score. I think this is going to be an over game. I'm probably not going to take the total, but I lean Arkansas in the late game.
I agree. And how I feel is, we haven't seen Arkansas get loose yet, right? They had that comeback win against Colgate. Like, they battled back last game again, or like they beat Oral Roberts. Like, you know, like that, like Oral Roberts had the game in their hand. They clamped down on defense. They played a good second half. They win. But Baylor struggled. Like, Baylor flat out struggled and then had that hell of a second half. I just don't think Arkansas has been able to do well from three yet. And Baylor went, what, 3 of 19? What'd they do? They didn't even shoot well against
No, they did not.
So I think both teams are going to stroke it tonight. So I see like a high. So, I mean, what do we have the total at right this second?
147.5.
Ooh, okay. So I'd like to know what that, what you looked up about the scoring there. That little statistic. Yeah. I have Baylor winning 78-71.
Okay, so let me pull up the shot quality of the game for these two teams here.
What's the line right now? 7.5. Yeah. So yep. Arkansas covers. Okay. And it goes over the total.
So based upon the for shot quality for Baylor, based upon the shots both teams took, Baylor wins that game 88% of the time. Villanova wins the game 12. The average score is 67-53.5, so so-called 67-54. The game played out the way as it should have. Baylor, I felt in the second half, was incredibly impressive, got to the rim. It was drive, spin, lay the ball in. And that's what they did over and over and over again, because Villanova could not defend it. They stopped shooting the three because it wasn't effective for them. Arkansas, based upon the shots both teams took, Arkansas wins the game 77% of the time. Oral Roberts wins the game 23% of the time. The average score in this game, 82.67-74.31. Basically showing you that Oral Roberts was lucky to be in the game. An average of 8 to 9 points. In that victory should have been the average. To me, Arkansas again is one of those teams. They're very much like Bama in the way that they're built and the way that they operate. And I just, I feel that they're going to shoot better than they have. I feel that they're going to play better than they have. I feel the same way about Baylor, is that Baylor is going to shoot better than they have. Baylor did not shoot well at all in that Villanova game and found a way to win. It was impressive to me. I still don't think they're going to win the tournament, but I think they're going to make the Final Four. And I do think that this is a Baylor victory. However, I'm taking Arkansas on the points if I need to tonight. I do think that based upon what we've seen so far and the actual quality of these two teams, if Baylor starts slow like they have in two of the previous three games, they did not start slow versus Wisconsin. They did versus Hartford. They did versus Villanova. I don't think they get back into it. This is not going to an Arkansas team that's going to let you get back into it. They're going to lock you down defensively, and that's what they did in that second half versus Oral Roberts when they were down, and they ended up finding a way to win that game. I just don't see that happening with Baylor. If they have a bad first half tonight,
look out because Baylor could go down. I like Arkansas. I like the points.
I agree. I completely agree here. And my only issue is I just because we're getting a little tighter here, I'm trying to like come up with, all right, what's the line? How are the teams playing? Who's done what? What was it? So like I have 78-71, which essentially is the line 7.5. It's 8 at my local and it's 148 at my local, which I have I have it going barely over by 1 point. So to me, this is a no bet because there's no like advanced side for me. But I like Baylor to win, but I would not be surprised if Arkansas fucking lights it up today. Like they fucking just let loose because they haven't yet. They haven't let loose yet.
Yep. And a question from our buddy Adam, hasn't Arkansas not been great in the first half? Absolutely. They've struggled in two of their three first halves as well. They struggled versus Colgate. They struggled versus Oral Roberts. So the same story can be said to them. If Arkansas has a bad first half, they're not going to be able to play the game where we have more talent. We're going to be able to get back into the game. So this is a game, in my opinion, that you stay away from the first half and you make a second half play based upon what the first half does. If either of these teams struggle in the first half and it's not close, I think this could be a blowout. Really, I do. So, I think it goes both ways. And I think that's a fair, a fair thing to point out that Arkansas has struggled just as much in the first half, if not worse, maybe than Baylor in two of their three games as well. They were terrible versus Oral Roberts. And for the large part of that Colgate game, they were the same thing. So, it took a final 3-minute run there for Arkansas to finally take the lead in the final 2 minutes of that in that game versus Colgate. So we'll see. I think, again, I would like to see what happens in the first round. And again, Hartford, Baylor played terribly versus Hartford, like really bad. They were not good. They covered the number, but it took them a long time to get going. Same thing with Nova. It took them a long time to get going, and finally they started attacking the rim and stopped shooting threes. Let's move on, Joe.
I'm going to PP it. Give me USC to cover versus Gonzaga.
Woo! USC plus 9.
It's not a good matchup for the Zags. USC can shoot. They're averaging 80 points a game in the tournament. They have a big in there to do it. Jalen Suggs, I think, is the best player on Gonzaga, but I think that the Mobley brothers, they're 1-2 after that. I know Kispert's good. I know Timmy's in there. Dude, I legitimately think USC can win outright, but I'm going to take the points in this one. This is what my math did. I had USC 79, Gonzaga 78. But I'm not gonna. So what's that? 157. What's the total? 155.
Let me take a look at what the live total is. It opened, I believe, at 156. It's now down to 153.
So yeah, I'll go over 153 too. But I have USC. I have USC covering in my math, which is Joe Murray math. Don't figure it out. I have 79-78 USC, but I'm not touching a side on who wins. I got USC covering.
Yeah, I think the fact that this is a single-digit spread should kind of tell you where a lot of the bookmakers think this is going, that there is a legitimate chance that USC pulls the upset. Now, Ken Palm put out a tweet, was it March 20th, that he wanted to see USC Gonzaga. And basically, it's the number one two-point defense versus the number one two-point offense of all time. Just to clarify, Gonzaga is the number one two-point percentage offense of all time. And USC, on the other way, is the number one this year two-point percentage defense in the country. So we're getting really a crazy cool matchup that's going to be really interesting to watch. Last night, USC, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but they were fucking stroking it, dude. They could not miss from three, and I'll see if I can pull it up here. But they were ridiculous. And when USC is shooting like that, the same way that they shot against Kansas, right? When USC is shooting like that, you can't beat them. It doesn't matter if you're Kansas. I don't even think Gonzaga has a prayer to beat them if you're shooting like that and playing the defense that they were. It was straight up domination by USC. One of the most dominating performances. And I don't think the actual score
tells you the pure dominance of the actual game. USC shot 58.8% from three against Oregon. Okay. They dominated, just straight up dominated, 10 of 17 from three. All right. Now we can't expect them to repeat that versus Gonzaga. I think that we can all fair enough say that and say, we can't expect the same repeat performance against a team like Gonzaga, a much better team in general, much better defensive team, et cetera, et cetera. That being said, USC matches up extremely well. The X factor in this game, Joe, you talked about, is going to be Jalen Suggs, because I think that where USC lacks is the guard play. Interior with the Moby brothers, they're going to be able to match up versus Kisper. They're going to be able to match up versus Timmy. They're going to be able to match up with some of the things that Gonzaga likes to do, especially on the interior of the paint. And the way that they guard, I think Gonzaga is going to have, you know, they're going to have to shoot more than they want to shoot. And I think that leads to the ability for USC, if they play and shoot relatively well, even worse than they did last night, just relatively well, I think that they're going to have a real chance to win this game. I like the USC +9.2. I'm not going to PP it because you already did, but I do think that that is the right side. I don't really have a great feel on the total, but I think that the lower you go, the more it favors USC in a game that, in my opinion, is going to be a 3-point battle. Because again, number one 2-point percentage offense of all time versus the number one 2-point percentage defense in the country, which is USC. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, and by the way, I have Gonzaga winning the whole tournament. So this is just the USC is impressed me. And I don't know, has USC like been able to get into their bench yet? Like, I don't know, like if they get into foul trouble, like Timmy, I've seen him sip. I watched a Pacific game where he got into foul trouble. Kispert got into foul trouble. Like, they hung around the whole entire time. So whatever. I Joe Murray math, which I try not to do often here. All the lines I have too high. And if we look at the next game here, this is just what I had on my own here.
I just wanted to answer your question because USC in that Kansas game got deep into their bench.
Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
They got deep into their bench. They put Anderson for 18, Goodwin for 15, Ogunpolo for 11. Like, they actually, and usually they go six deep, but they went 7-8 deep in this game. So that is, you know, they at least have gotten to play a little bit.
Yeah, and even last night they played a lot of guys too. I thought Baylor went on a 9-0 run. I thought they were gonna keep it close, and they didn't. But I think the spreads are too high, is all I'm saying. In every single game. And even Michigan, I have Michigan winning the game. So I'm going to take the over is my pick. I'm not going to PP it, but that's my pick. I have Michigan winning 76-68. The line is too close. It's 8, right? 8. I have 76-68.
It's down to 7. It opened at 7.5, shot up to 8.5. Sharp set it up to 8.5, and then it may have been a head fake, and it's back. It went back down to 7.5. Now it's down to 7.
All right, so I have Michigan winning by 8. I wouldn't bet it. I just wouldn't bet it.
This is going to be a really, really interesting game to me. To me, this is a game of straight up who plays better, because I'm starting to think the talent of these two teams is relatively close. UCLA has literally been dominant throughout the tournament, with the exception of Michigan State, where they were down, I think, 11 at first half. They have been they've been a steam engine. They dominated every single team they played. They beat BYU by 11. Honestly, I think they should have been more. They beat Abilene Christian by 20 in a game. Abilene Christian missed a lot of shots, but credit to UCLA. They made it tough at times. At times, they didn't play the most stunning defense ever, and they made their shots when they needed to. They beat Bama. They let Bama get back into the game, and usually what happens in these overtime games is, well, the favorites either, you know, cover or win or whatever. Nope. They dominated overtime, beat Bama by 10. You know, UCLA has been a team that's been really intriguing. You're taking a look at all the teams that are left, Oregon State, UCLA, et cetera, et cetera. USC, I didn't think USC was crazy. But, you know, UCLA, et cetera. I think that UCLA is probably the best remaining of, you know, of them at Oregon State. I'd take UCLA in that game. I think UCLA has a chance to beat Michigan here, which sucks because I have a nice future on Michigan. I do. And this is going to be my square dog. But I think UCLA would be the side that I would love to play here. I won't do it. I can't do it because I just ultimately think that Michigan, if they can't find someone to guard Dickinson, Dickinson's going to dominate that game. And all of a sudden, Michigan will run away with it, which is why I think the spread is where it is. That being said, it would not shock me if both dogs covered tomorrow and one or both won outright. Like, I can see it.
Jaime Jaquez keeps it close. Jaime Jaquez and Tiger Campbell. They've been really good for UCLA. And whoever the big man was who came in at the end of the game completely changed the whole entire game yesterday. They have three big men. They have a kid that just came out of high school.
Juzang has been the one who's been just fantastic in this tournament.
Didn't play in the final stretch of the game yesterday.
Yep.
That's what I mean. They brought in that big man and he was out. So, all right. Those are our tournament picks. It starts in 45 minutes. So,
do you have any value remaining on the futures game that's going on there? Like, do you have any value remaining on the March Madness or anything? Cause I know that we've heard that discussed. Gonzaga is still plus money to win the tournament. They're plus 140 right now. Still
Baylor to me.
Gonzaga plus 120, Baylor plus 240, Michigan plus 400, Houston plus 500, USC plus 1200, Arkansas plus 1500, UCLA plus 2500, Oregon State plus 30, plus 3000. I think Baylor's the worst value on the board, actually. I do, because I think that they have the hardest road to get there. They have to go by Arkansas, who I think is one of the best teams remaining. Then they have to face, you know, they have to face the other side, and then they have to play Gonzaga. I think that Baylor is the hardest road remaining, at least for and especially for hedge purposes. I think I'm looking UCLA 25-1. If UCLA wins tomorrow, that's hedgeable. I mean, against Gonzaga, it's not going to be it's not a fun one, but man, is that hedgeable. It is. On the other side, I think you probably lost all the value for a hedge there. I really do. I don't think there's going to be much there. So I think you're looking at, you know, hey, UCLA or nothing. You're riding out what you have. Michigan right now, I have a 18.5-1 ticket and a 25-1 ticket. And I think I'm going to, hey, if they win tomorrow, and I'm praying they do, I think I'm going to start hedging real quick. Real quick. So,
all right. And then we get the Final Four this weekend. So we'll be breaking that down on the old Saturday show.
Yep. We'll bring that down Saturday.
All right. Not sure if we saw any questions from anybody else. Boom, 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 boom.
We've answered them all. Gotten to them all.
We are done. So let's move on. The hot stove baseball.
Before we do that, we have to got take care of the sponsors here, Joe. Got to take care of the sponsors. You know, whatever. So listen, I want to tell you about BetterThan.Vegas. I did a whole bunch of videos for them. I got knocked out of the tournament, unfortunately, on a tiebreak technicality that I let the other person move on. I thought that was fair. But listen, BetterThan.Vegas, they're an amazing site. They're their home for avid sports bettors, providing insights, analysis, free betting picks. They have a ton of great cappers. Obviously, I was hot as hell, still got knocked out. Great cappers around the globe. If you're looking to improve your audience, you just want to go a place to maybe document your picks, whatever you want to do. It's essentially, you know, it's a social video platform, you know, for sports betting, which is really cool. You know, in my opinion, I highly suggest you check it out. I'm going to be posting a video there later tonight, maybe after the podcast, before the games, for my picks of the day and my picks tomorrow. So anyways, if you want to check it out, I suggest you do BetterThan.Vegas.
All right. BetterThan.Vegas is a bunch of videos of entertaining people. So that is that. We wanted to do a baseball preview. I know some people, who have been interested on this, I guess the first question when it comes to it is, you know, last year we were worried about doing win totals and things like that. Is there value in taking win totals this year?
So, in my opinion, I think that what you need to do is you need to find a site that will do percentage win totals. I know that Buckeye is a local book that's basically doing just percentage based totals. If you want to do totals, you want to top your money, that's fine too, as long as you have enough credit and you feel like it's okay. Let's just start with the regular season wins. I'll go through them and whatever. I'll give you the numbers. We don't have time to go through each team, but we'll go through the teams you like. Arizona over under 75.5. Atlanta Braves over under 91.5. Baltimore Orioles 64.5. Boston Red Sox 80.5.
So I'm going over Red Sox this year.
Okay, we'll definitely get to the Red Sox. Chicago Cubs 79.5. Chicago White Sox 90.5. Cincinnati Reds 81.5. Cincinnati Reds 82.5. Rockies 63.5. Tigers 68. Astros 87.5. Royals 73.5. Angels 83.5. Dodgers 103.5. Marlins 72.5. Brewers 82.5. Twins 88.5. Mets 90.5. Yankees 96.5. A's 86.5. Phillies 82.5, Pirates 59.5, Padres 94.5, Giants 75.5, Mariners 72.5, Cardinals 87.5, Rays 86.5, Rangers 67.5, Blue Jays 87.5, and Nationals 84.5. Woo. That's a lot. Let's start with where you wanted to talk about. Let's start with the Red Sox. Go.
Over. Manager. He's better. I know the division's probably going to be a bit better, but I just think that J.D. Martinez will be back. That's going to help right there. And they have a lot of pieces that they're going to move around this year. So trying to depend on one guy to have a great season, it's not going to be the plan for them. They're going to have multiple pieces. They're going to move it around. But I just think that in this baseball league, if you go 500, you should be able to go 500 with a good manager. So that's what I'm basing it on. I'm basing it on the simple fact they have a manager, and they do have – like, I look at – I don't want to compare them to the Boston Bruins by any chance, but when you have, like, a core of players, like a Devers, Bogarts, Martinez, like, that's a good core. Vasquez, you're going to have to depend a little bit more on Verdugo this year, but I think they have a core of players. Their pitching still is going to be the one in the end, but I think they're going to put up enough offense this year where they're going to win. I have them winning 82 games. So I'll PP it too. Why not? Let's do it.
You want to PP it? Okay.
Let's do it.
All right. I'm going to take the other side of this one. I'm not going to PP it, but I very much like the under. I don't see what people see in the over. Right. You have a great lineup. You did last year too. Your rotation has basically, there's no solution, and that was the problem last year. Eduardo Rodriguez is already hurt. Nathan Eovaldi, we saw what he did. He faded down the stretch. Garrett Richards, in my opinion, is maybe the worst signing of the offseason. I think that he's horrendous. I don't think he'll be in the majors by the end of the season. Martin Perez, fine. Nick Pivetta, straight wild card. Your bullpen is maybe the worst in the majors. Matt Barnes is trash. We know that. Adam Ottavino could be nice, but Ottavino is a seventh, eighth inning guy. He's not a closer. You don't have a closer there. Sawamura, you have no idea. If you're starting relying on Darwinson Hernandez, Ryan Brazier, Josh Taylor, what's the difference of what you were last year and this year? You're hoping that your lineup produces better, but again, any sort of injury to Xander or Devers, and I think you're in serious, serious trouble. I don't think this team in this division, I still think the Rays are better than you. The Yankees are better than you. The Blue Jays are probably better than you now. I don't see what people see on this team. I think this team is going to get smoked. It's going to be fun to watch them because they're going to be younger. And with Enrique Hernandez and Marwin Gonzalez and Michael Chavis, they're going to have a ton of position flexibility. So they're going to move guys around a lot, which is fun. But in terms of actually being a good team, no, this team is not going to be competitive unless they pick up another really good major league starter. And I think that they're, I don't see that happening anytime soon. So I go the opposite with the Boston Red Sox, in my opinion.
Just while we're in there, what is the Rays total and what's the Yankees total?
So the Rays total is at 86.5, very, very juiced to the under. The Yankees total is at 96.5. The Blue Jays are at 87.5. You have three teams above you that have significantly higher win totals just projected. I don't see how you're going to win enough games to make it to 80. The Blue Jays, to me, are going to be the team that's going to probably surprise a lot of people out of nowhere, I guess. I don't really know why. You take a look at their roster, they're significantly better. They have a young core. They actually have pitching, unlike you. Same thing with the Rays. I think the media is just getting really hyped about the Red Sox because it's baseball season. And, the Red Sox were so bad last year, they can't possibly be that bad. I agree. Mm-hmm. But I just think they're playing in maybe the best division in baseball, or at least one of them. I just don't see how – they get nearly close to that. If you want to talk about, teams, the Yankees are just filled with depth. They have an elite bullpen, as they usually do. And to me, you take a look. I mean, their seventh hitter is, their lineup is better than you, and they have a better rotation led by an ace, and their bullpen is significantly better than yours, assuming that Aroldis Chapman doesn't continue to do the bullshit that he does. Chad Green's been a very good reliever. Lois Siga emerged as a very good reliever. So, I mean, they have a very, very good, a bullpen there, and they'll probably end up adding to it as they do every year. And then, Tampa Bay, it's just, they're another really, really good team that, in my opinion, just doesn't really get talked about because it's Tampa Bay and whatever. But Glasnow is a really good starter. And if they find a second starter to emerge from that group, like, then they're going to be good. The problem is the back end of that rotation. Like, if Rich Hill can give them something or whatever, the problem is the back end of that rotation. But their bullpen is elite. Deo Castillo, Peter Fairbanks, Nick Anderson, I know, is out for their half the season now. But don't forget, they still have the kid from San Diego who they acquired in the trade, too. I'm blanking on the name of right now, even though he's elite as well. They'll probably end up calling him up halfway through the year. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. Prospect. So they're going to be a very, very good team, in my opinion. The Rays. They always figure out the pitching. They always have they never have an issue with that. I take a look at these teams, and I just don't see Luis Patino. Is the other guy they have. He'll probably come up, either be a reliever or a starter for them. I look at this and say I don't see what everyone sees about the Red Sox. I don't. It's not that I love, the Rays or the Jays or anyone specifically. It's just I don't see the love for the Red Sox here. That's all.
Okay, and the Yankees win total. You think that they can go? Like, I don't know. I just see 100 wins, and man, team's got to be really bad to get 100 wins this year, I feel like.
The thing is that it's going to come down to the rotation for the Yankees, right? I mean, it feels like the AL East is just one big question mark at the rotation spot, and whoever has the best rotation wins. Like, you sign a guy like Kluber, you don't know what you're going to get from him this year. Like, you just have no idea. But I would rather take a chance on a guy like Kluber than I would on a guy like Garrett Richards. Same with Jameson Taillon. You acquire him from Pittsburgh. He's been a real question mark, but he's a guy who can really develop. Domingo German, you're hoping that, he comes through with something at some point. If you're the Yankees, you still have, a plethora of minor league players that can come up as well. You're hoping that you get Luis Severino back at some point. It's going to be interesting to see, what happens there. I'm trying to remember, like, the Yankees are going to be deep enough at the point. I mean, the Yankees still have like Davey Garcia and Luis Gill, and like guys like can come up and give them something. Clark Schmidt's another guy who might be back. If he's back this year, might give them something out of the minors too. Like, they're going to be able to bring guys up and circle some depth that the Red Sox don't have. And maybe even a team like the Rays doesn't have. I know they wanted Pivetta pretty bad. So I think it's going to be interesting to whoever has the best rotation. I think this is a division where, instead of trying to find out, go over with everyone, just be simple. Give me the Baltimore Orioles under 64.5 wins. just be simple. You're playing in one of the hardest divisions in baseball, and the Orioles, to me, still lack talent at almost every position. Like, really, they do. I don't see where they're getting 65 wins from. John Means is a nice player. Like I think, you know, I drafted him last night in one of my leagues. Like I like him as a you know, a potential starter with some upside. But like your lineup sucks, dude. You're gonna get nothing out of your infield, nothing. And you know, except maybe Trey Mancini might give you something. And you know, your outfield is just a straight up unknown. So, you know, between the rotation, Matt Harvey is your second starter. Like, be you know, keep it simple, stupid. Give me Baltimore under.
All right. You know, it's the team that I in the American League that I see the most action on right now is the Chicago White Sox. Like, they're just getting a ton of love, even to like to win the whole damn thing. They're getting a ton of love here. Why are the White Sox getting so much love this year?
Well, the White Sox are getting love because they are significantly from where they were last year. You know, all these guys, all these younger players basically get a whole year now. Here's the problem, you know, you're bringing up your Nick Madrigals. You get a third, you know, a whole year of Moncada at third. You're getting a whole year of Luis Robert at center. Now you're probably bringing up Andrew Vaughn. Well, why are you bringing up Andrew Vaughn now instead of maybe calling up during midseason? That's because Eloy Jimenez is out for 5 to 6 months with a torn bicep. To me, as good as the White Sox rotation is, like, you know, I do think that the White Sox rotation is really good with Giolito and Keuchel and Lynn. And I think Cease, you're hoping that one of Cease and Rodon really come through. And if that's the case, you can always move Garrett Crotchet into a starter role there. The White Sox may have the best rotation in you know, the AL, you know, assuming that the Twins and the, you know, the Detroit Tigers rotations don't suddenly explode out of nowhere. But they have an elite closer in Liam Hendricks. They have a really good bullpen. Their lineup 1 through 9 is ridiculous. I mean, outside of really Luis García, who's their left fielder, who obviously is going to replace Eloy Jimenez. Yeah,
Dallas Keuchel.
I mean, they're fucking loaded. You know, Grandal catcher, Abreu at first, Madrigal at second, Moncada at third, Tim Anderson, who is really under talked about at short. Luis Robert in center, Eaton in right field. Andrew Vaughn's probably going to be their DH, and now Eloy Jimenez is probably out for the season. You'll probably see them go out and get a left fielder at some point, maybe earlier in the season than expected. I still think this team is going to be really good. 90 wins in that division is a lot, and I'm very tempted to take the under just as kind of like my natural feelings on it. I'm very tempted to take the under there. It's just, man, that team is so good. But without Eloy Jimenez, I feel like they're still missing a big bat. It's just, man, Lance Lynn was so good last year. If Keuchel has even a remotely a similar type of year, they're going to be good. And, you know, they are loaded at, you know, in the rotation. So it just, I'm not going to do it just because I want to keep it simple here. And I think that's trying to be too savvy and whatever. So, all right, let's continue. Talking about the AL Central still. Cleveland Indians, 82.5. This is Fred's team, Joe. Fred loves the Cleveland Indians. And I do think that he has a point, right? I do think he has a point. My problem with Cleveland is, again, the division they play in, right? You're going to have to play with the White Sox and the Twins and now, you know, the Indians. Their rotation is going to be really good. Shane Bieber, maybe the best pitcher in baseball. Zach Plesac, Aaron Civale. You have three really good starters right there. You're you know, planning on Tristan McKenzie to be in your rotation this year. You're hoping that he develops. Your bullpen between Karinchak, Wickren, and Class A is maybe the best in the best young bullpen in the AL, probably. You still have questions in your lineup. Like Cesar Hernandez at second still scares the shit out of me. But you have, you know, you have some upside guys. Andrés Giménez is a shortstop who's very rarely talked about. You traded Francisco Lindor, but, you know, you still have Ahmed Rosario. You know, Andrés Giménez is just kind of talked about. I still really like the makeup of this team. I just think trying to take a position on them at this point is going to be tough. I think the number is settled, and I think that's kind of where it should be. I think I'm probably going to pass on taking a number there.
What are the A's in the West? And I'm going to take them. I don't even know the number, but I have hit on them making the playoffs every year. So I'm going to ride it out again because I don't trust Texas. I don't trust Seattle. The Angels, hell no. And then Houston, right? I mean, so give me the Angels. Sorry, give me the Athletics to make the playoffs this year. What's the win total?
So the win total is 86.5. It's going to be interesting to see what happens at the top of the rotation. Frankie Montas, Jesus Luzardo are really good. Chris Bassett had a really good year last year. Sean Manet and Mike Fiers. I mean, if you get pretty good seasons from all those guys, you're looking at a really good team. The question is going to come in the bullpen for them. You know, Jake Diekman is their, you know, their number two right now before AJ Puck really kind of picks up. Trevor Rosenthal is their closer. That's a little scary. Their lineup is really, really good. And I think Mitch Moreland as DH is going to actually be a big up there for them because I really like him not playing first and him, you know, just straight up hitting. I think they're going to be really, really good. They have a good catcher in Sean Murphy. Like, you know, Mark Conahan left, it leaves a little bit to be desired, but just in general, like, their lineup is really good. Chapman can't nearly be as bad as last year. I expect Matt Olson to be better this year. I really, really am very high on Olson this year, too. Laureano should be just as good, if not better. Like, I think that that's a team that could be really, really good. The question is, what happens to that bullpen? Are they still strong in the pen? I think that might be where the Oakland downfall is, and that's kind of why I'm avoiding a position on them this year, at least in my opinion.
All right, yeah, and so, just the American League in general, though, like Yankees, right? Rays will still be in there. You like Chicago. You mentioned Cleveland could have a run. And, I mean, is there a true threat? Like, I just don't see it. I don't – maybe the Yankees, but I don't see a true threat.
I think you could see any of these teams really be a threat. It just depends on how the health breaks for them. But I honestly think that these teams are relatively very good this year. I think the AL is better than it has been the past few years, which brings me to my next win total PP, which is Kansas City under 73.5 games at plus money, plus 110. I don't know exactly what people are seeing with Kansas City. Is it because, like, you're very excited about Bobby Witt and what he provides to the table? Yay! Like, you know, he's a really, really good prospect. Don't get me wrong. I like Kansas City. I like what they're building there. But they're not going to be a 73-win team this year. Their number two pitcher is Brady Singer. Mike Minor is their number three. Like, you're very questionable there. And the lineup, like, Benintendi, Kyle Isbell, you know, Hunter Dozier is a nice player who goes up and down. They have a lot of names that really don't perform as well. Like, if Jorge Soler plays really well, sure. But I just think in the AL Central, again, the Tigers got much better this year. They're going to have a better rotation. I'm not going to take the Tigers under, but I'm going back on the Royals under. I can't see where this team gets 73 wins from. I don't like them at all. I don't. I'm very low on Kansas City this year. And again, Minnesota's going to be really good. You know, Cleveland should be still very, very good. Chicago's going to be really good. You talk about a team that has almost no rotation. Brad Keller's your frontline starter. I'm kind of fucking scared for the people who want to take the Royals over. What are you thinking? You think Whit Merrifield and Adalberto Marcy are going to be, like, you know, Legion of Glory? They're nice players. I like them. Fantasy players, sure. But real baseball players? Pass. Give me a hard pass on that. No, thank you. So that's going to be another one for me. I'm taking a deep pass on.
Anything else in the American League?
I thought about taking the Texas Rangers under. I think that is going to ultimately be, you know what? Give me Texas Rangers under 67.5. Maybe I'm being a little too greedy here, but again, I'm taking a look at, I'm fading the bad teams this year because I think the AL is going to be divided into haves and have-nots. And I think you're going to see a really big divide between these two, between the good teams in the AL and the bad teams in the AL. And I still place the Texas Rangers in the bad teams of the AL this year, at least in my opinion. Like, you know, they're, again, another fun team coming up with a lot of guys who in the few years could be really, really good, but they have very limited power and they're going off a lot of upside guys. Brock Holt might be their starting third baseman. Nate Lowe, who had a really good year, could be their starting first baseman. I like Nick Solak as a player, but he's their starting second baseman. And, you know, he might be a middle of the order hitter. Like, they're in serious trouble there. In left field, David Dahl. You know how much I love David Dahl. I've talked about him on this podcast and how much I love David Dahl. Still, like, he sucked last year. I think he'll be better this year, but you know, whatever. You just lost your closer. He's out for the season already. Like, it's just there's a lot there that I think you're riding on. Kyle Gibson is your number one starter, and you got the guy from Japan, Koei Orihara, and Mike Fulton-Devitz. I mean, a lot of question marks. Dane Dunning could be a nice prospect who comes through the system, and actually, you know, unlike Chicago, maybe he'll pan out in Texas, but still. It's a team in a ballpark that's very hitter friendly that doesn't have a good lineup. I don't see any value in playing the over there. And again, you'll notice my trend here is I like to find the unders because I feel like overs for the most part are very overvalued and overplayed in baseball, especially win totals.
So give me the under for the Cubs. What do we got for the Cubs?
It's 79.5. Right now, and the under is juiced, and I don't. This is going to be one of those teams, Joe, that I don't really know what to make of them yet. Their rotation has some upside, and their lineup has a ton of upside, but I kind of agree that the under feels like the right side. It's just it's tough. The rotation's the problem for me, right? Kyle Hendricks, Jake Arrieta, Zach Davies, Trevor Williams, and then you're looking at maybe Adbert Azalea as your fifth guy. That's a problem. It really is. Like, Jake Arrieta can't be your second starter when you're competing for a playoff spot anymore. Zach Davies cannot be a top three option, I don't think, in a team that's competing. I mean, the Cardinals got significantly better this offseason, in my opinion. The Brewers are still an extremely viable team. The Reds have gotten significantly better the past 2 years. I think the only reason that you're even discussing where the Cubs are is because the Pirates are so damn bad. And even they might have gotten better by, you know, they might actually end up moving some of their prospects up and, you know, playing some of these kids, and that's a problem. So I agree. I lean Cubs under. I'm not going to play it, but I do lean that way, Joe.
Another under. I'm looking at two of them right off the bat. The Dodgers, I think, are at 103, right?
103.5.
Under. And then what's the Padres?
The Padres are 94.5.
Under. Both under PPM. Boom.
Boom. Bow. Joe Murray going ballsy on the good teams.
No analysis. I'm fading the Dodgers and winning 100. They don't need to win 100 games. They don't need to win 100 games. And the thing with the Dodgers, how many teams do we see year in and year out spend big money and actually play well? And that's why I'm fading the Padres on that one.
Yeah. I mean, that is fair. It's an interesting angle to approach it, for sure. I think one of those teams will go under and one of those teams will go over. I think that you'll probably get somewhere in the middle there. How bad is Arizona going to be this year? You know, are they going to be,
that's a good question.
You know, are they going to be a 75 win team? How bad is Colorado going to be without Nolan Arenado? And I think you take a look at the D-backs and kind of what they have going on is they have a lot of the same questions. But at least the rotation at least has some answers. Zach Gallen, you know, really came out and really became a name last year. Madison Bumgarner will give you innings. He may not give you good innings anymore, but he'll give you innings. Merrill Kelly, Caleb Smith, Luke Weaver, all legitimate options. Not good options, but legitimate options to pitch and be major league starters and give you something out of that pen. You know, the lineup is okay. You know, you have Christian Walker, who I think has developed to a good prospect, and, you know, he might be able to come through. Cole Calhoun was signed. Ketel Marte has been a really good player there for a while. You know, Eduardo Escobar is going to be really good. So, I mean, it's their lineup still has something there. They're gonna take some games that maybe they shouldn't. I think if you're looking for an under in this division, Joe, in my opinion, I think it's going to be Colorado. I do. I think the under 63.5 is live. I'm not going to PP it because I think the NL just in general is kind of a fucking hodgepodge of shit right now. And I don't really feel super comfortable taking anything, But I do think that the Rockies without Arenado, you know, obviously they want to open up time for Brendan Rodgers and Ryan McMahon and everything kind of there and Garrett Hampson, and they're gonna do that now. But the problem is, who's your middle of the order bat now? Is it gonna be CJ Cron? Because you know that's gonna be a problem when you play teams away. Outside of Trevor Story, you know, outside of Story and Blackman, they really don't have a legitimate bat in that lineup. You know, Josh Fuentes is not an answer. You know, Elias Diaz is not an answer. Ramon Altapia is a nice defensive player, but he's not really an answer for a bat. He's more of a, you know, platoon bench guy. Like, I think that you're looking at a team that is really in trouble in terms of where they're going to be hitting wise and the actual amount of runs that they can produce. So I think to me, that's the issue there. You know, and that's kind of why I think I lean towards that way, but their pitching's, you know, pretty good. And same with Miami, which is the other team I consider taking it under on there, but I just couldn't because, you know, they're good pitching. The pitching rotations on these teams, they're pretty good. Sandy Alcantara, Pablo Lopez, Alicia Hernandez, like Trevor Rogers. Like if you get those guys going, they play well, you know, they're going to be pretty good. So, you know, I would be very surprised. I can't do it.
The Reds were the COVID darlings to go over last year.
Right.
A lot of people like them. The Pirates were bad. St. Louis, people are high on this year. I still think the Cubs are going to be bad. And then Milwaukee, right?
I just think that St. Louis got better. They picked up Arenado. They have a good rotation. Jack Flaherty should be better. Like, you know, Cincinnati should be good. But it just always feels like they have injury problems and the rotation still has some questions. Like, what are you going to get out of Sonny Gray this year? He's always a year-to-year guy. Tyler Molly was really good last year, but I don't really like him as, you know, your third rotation guy. You know, Wade Miley's, you know, at least will eat up innings. But I think they're going to have to pick up another starter. Their lineup is ridiculous, though. I mean, really, you know, between Barnhart and Votto, they're going to introduce Jonathan India, I think, into the mix. Mike Moustakas, Eugenio Suarez, Jesse Winker has finally picked it up a little bit. Astudillo Aquino is going to be in that mix. Nick Senzel, who was a top prospect a few years ago. Nick Castellanos. Like, they're going to have a lot of options for that lineup. And then they picked up that Shogo Akiyama guy who is from Japan. They're going to have a lot of lineups and a lot of options in the lineup. I think they're going to be pretty good. They even have a really good bullpen between Garrett Sims, Doolittle, TJ Antoine. Like they have the makings of a good team. Again, it's why I feel like when we talked about it, I didn't think there was a ton of value left on the board this year, but I felt the AL unders, especially this year, were too high. And I think that's where I was looking for some value, especially this year. So,
NL East.
I talked about the NL East a little bit. I think that the Mets and the Braves are going to be the two teams, obviously there at the end. The Nationals, they're going to be your you know your classic sleeper. Like they picked up some, you know, some really good players, made some really good additions in the offseason. Like I think that the addition of Josh Bell is really being underplayed here. I love Josh Bell and what he brings to that team. You know, John Lester as your fourth or fifth starter in that rotation, just to be a steady guy to give you innings at the end, I think is a good addition. You know, Starlin Castro is a good addition at third. Like, I like what they've done. Kyle Schwarber in left is going to be interesting. That's going to be an adventure out there. But, you know, I think they have a nice lineup. I just, again, you have two teams in that division in Atlanta and, you know, and New York who are just, they're going to be dominant again. And I expect, again, it's one of those divisions where one of the Nationals and the Phillies is going to suck, but I don't want to guess who. And then the Marlins, they actually might not be a terrible team. They might beat up on some other teams from other divisions. So I don't want to take it under there either. So I'm just trying to be reasonable what my expectations are for the NL East. I do think if I'm going to go under, though, I'm going to take the Atlanta under. I think I'm going to take the Braves under. It would be my first choice. There's a lot of expectation on that team right now, and I think that there's a lot of potential to set up to fail. If that team wins 88 games, like, it would not shock me. So I think that would be the team I'd be looking at for
an under in that in the NL East. Just because, like, if you have one injury, man, if you have one small injury to, you know, to Acuna, that whole lineup is thrown out of whack. Now, it's a really good lineup, but it just it changes everything. And there are still question marks in that rotation. Like, what's Soroka going to give you? Is Ian Anderson going to break out this year? What's Drew Smyly going to do? And the back end of that bullpen, Will Smith, Chris Martin, AJ Minter, good, not great. So there's still some questions kind of going on there and what you're going to get out of those guys. I just think that would be the team I would choose to go under if I'm forced to make a choice.
All right, what are we looking at for division winners? I think we kind of hit that. MVP, Cy Young.
Okay, so in terms of the MVP, well, first off, do you want to do the make the playoffs? Because I think that this is where you're going to see some good value this year to make the playoffs. So to make the playoffs, Joe, how about this? Oakland to make the playoffs this year. We talked about them last year. Oakland A's to make the playoffs, minus 130. Do you want
Ooh,
it?
Ooh, let's do it.
PP, there you go. A's to make the playoffs, minus 130. So I think that's a good one, right? I think it's surprising. Like, you look at these teams that make the playoffs, and you're looking for value, and it is hard to find. I think the Indians to make the playoffs at plus 250, is pretty good value. Give me the Reds to make the playoffs. Yes, plus 200, PP. I just think in that division, there's going to be a lot of chances, and at plus 200, I'd take that over a team like the Cubs, who are plus 325. I just, you know, that would be something I'd rather risk, you know, I'd rather lay a little bit of money on, you know, and go in that way. I think another one potentially I'd look at is, you know, the Washington Nationals to make the playoffs. Yes, at plus 160. I think that would be another one potential. Again, I as I said, I like their moves. Just they're playing in a really tough division. And so I think that's going to come down, you know, to whoever does that. But I think that would be my one sleeper there. I really like that team. For Cy Young, let's talk about the, let's see if I can pull up the National League Cy Young and the American League Cy Young. So I think there's a legitimate value on the board this year in the American League, right? I think you're looking at guys who are maybe not crazy good, but I think there is some value this year, right? Zach Greinke, who is going to be a prominent member of that Astros staff, and you know, you're expecting a rebound there, sitting at 23-1. Frankie Montas sitting at 40-1, coming off the suspension. He is going to be interesting. Zach Plesac's a guy at 45-1. I think I'm going to have to take a nibble out of. For sure. Plesac is a guy who has the chance to be a really, really good pitcher. Maybe had, you know, maybe things didn't work out for him last year. But I'm looking for guys with some bigger odds that, you know, that could be, you know, taken early on in the season and you know, kind of gone, you know, go that route instead of trying to take the favorite. That's kind of the way that I approach the you know, the Cy Young guys. So I'm looking for a guy like Montas or maybe a guy like Andrew Heaney, guys who have good peripheral numbers, but maybe the numbers weren't as good last year. Let's see, in the NL, a guy like Mike Soroka to me at 40-1 is a chance you have to take. He was an elite pitcher a couple of years ago coming off an injury. Give me Soroka 41 is a great, to me, is good value. Zach Gallen at 40-1.
I was gonna say Max Fried of Atlanta. What's he at?
Yeah, he's 17-1. You can probably find him some places 20-1. I don't love that look just because I think that there's a lot of people on Fried this year. But I think Soroka, maybe someone who's in his rotation who pitched an elite level 2 years ago before getting hurt, I think that wouldn't be a terrible value. Looking at Corbin Burns, a guy maybe who's 40-1, that wouldn't be a terrible value. Zach Gallen, who's 35-1, not 40-1. Zach Gallen wouldn't be a terrible value. The guy I like most in the NL, though, and maybe all of Cy Young this year, Chris Paddock, who was horrendously bad for San Diego last year. If he rebounds, 66-1 is a price I have to nibble on. I have to nibble on that price a little bit. So that would be my guy I have to nibble on, runner up there, I think Soroka at 35 or 40-1. I have 40-1 here, but I see also another book that's 35-1. I think those are the two guys I'm looking at, especially for that in the AL. As I said, I'm looking at a guy like Zach Plesac at 40-45-1. That's a guy I think I have to nibble on too. There's some legitimate value there. And you know, it may be a guy, if you're hoping, you know, bounce back guy like Frankie Montas, if you can get a good price on him.
Yeah, not the Jake DeGrom, the Bowers, and all those guys. Just probably no value in that this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're basically taking a guy who is already basically has no value and everything. It's just it's crazy. Like I don't understand why people take the low prices on the Cy Young. You're better off taking the high prices on the Cy Young, in my opinion. All right, let's discuss the MVP, Joe. Who do you like for NL, AL and NL MVP?
Ooh, so give me Arozarena.
Randy Arozarena, he is 65-1 to win the AL MVP.
All right, that's crazy. And then Ozuna for the Braves.
Okay, so let's see if I can find Ozuna. Is he not listed? He is. Ozuna's listed at 45-1. To win the NL MVP. I like the Ozuna look. The Arozarena thing I think is a little scary just because I think that he's still a rookie in my opinion. I'm going to look at a guy like Austin Meadows, who I think is going to be a true elite hitter for that Tampa Bay team this year. He's sitting at 55-1. I think I'd nibble on that a little bit. Matt Olson at 45-1. I think Olson's going to have a really, really good year. I love Matt Olson this year. I kept him in my dynasty league this year instead of letting him hit free agency. So I'm taking Matt Olson at 45-1 for a nibble. And if you want maybe a little bit of a lower price guy, but a guy who still offers you some upside of what he can do, Bo Bichette at 35-1. Bichette was nasty last year and people really haven't figured that out. You know, he didn't get the praise because he was in Toronto. I know he's going to play in the same lineup as Vlad Guerrero, but I think Bo Bichette has a chance to really do that. So those would be the guys I'm looking to nibble on. Then I think you take maybe one elite hitter if you really want to go someone. You want to take not a Trout because I think, like 4-1, you're chasing nothing. But if you want to take a Gleyber Torres, a George Springer, a Luis Robert, like a guy whose maybe value is still up there, but not nearly where it was, I think that that's another one. I know Shohei Ohtani has been super publicized. I would stay away from the Ohtani in my opinion. I think that that's silly. In the NL, who do you like, Joe, in the NL? You like Ozuna, right?
Ozuna, yep.
From Brent. So I think Ozuna is a really good one. I'm going to nibble a little bit on Josh Bell at 100-1. Bell is a guy coming off a couple years ago who was just a really, really good player, got hurt, regressed a little bit. I think Josh Bell at 100-1, that's a price I have to take, at least for a little bit. I don't think the true value lies in the NL as much. My main guy that I'm going to nibble on a little bit this year is going to be Bryce Harper. I think at 12-1, I think that you can make a case for Harper, but there's really no good value in the NL. I think you hit on one of the only other guys I would look at is Ozuna at 35-1. I just find it a hard time believing that he's going to have the repeat performance. Maybe the one other guy I look at is Pete Alonso. And I know that seems silly, but now he's going to be in a lineup with Lindor, maybe see some better pitches. I think Pete Alonso at 35-1 is not the worst bet you've ever made. But again, these are all small nibbles that I think that, you know, that we're talking about here. So, all right.
Are we missing anything?
Let's go to who you think is going to win it all, Joe. Is there any value in anything? I guess we could do Rookie of the Year. We'll save Rookie of the Year for another day. We can talk about that a different day. Because I think that that's something that happens throughout the season. Give me your pennant winners. Who wins the AL? Who wins the NL? Your World Series winners.
All right. So
actually, you know what? Let's start with division winners first, and then we can move on to that. Let's do division winners. AL East. Who's your division winner, Joe?
It's going to be the Yankees.
Okay, they're minus 250. You like anything? The Rays are plus 450. The Jays are plus 300.
Well, the Rays got a shot, I think. It's just there's no value for me. I mean, I'd like to say the Red Sox, but no. Nope. Yeah, it's Yankees. I think the Rays make the playoffs. I'm gonna probably go White Sox in the Central, and I'm going A's in the West.
Okay, I consider taking a nibble on the Blue Jays if you can find a 450 or 500. I think 4-5-1 is a fair price in the East, especially to beat the Yankees. In the Central, I think Cleveland to win the division at plus 800 is stupid. It is. It's stupid. Like, that's silly. I'm not going to take it, but, man, I want to nibble on that. I think I'll be square, and I'll take the White Sox in that division. I think I'll take the Blue Jays in the AL East. In the AL West, I will take Oakland plus 135. I'll ride that with you, Joe. I like that. Oakland plus 135. I think that you're going to see a really elite performance in a Matt Olson. So I like that. NL Central, give me the Reds plus 450. Give me the Reds plus 450 to win that division.
So I'm going St. Louis, and you know who I think is going to have a huge year? Goldschmidt. With Arenado in there, I think it's really going to put more opportunities for him. So I think – and I like Flaherty too. So I'm going Cardinals big in the Central this year.
They're minus 115.
All right. That's good.
You want to PP that?
Let's do it.
All right. Let me PP the Cincinnati Reds to win the AL Central plus four, NL Central plus 450.
I'm going Braves, but I got this feeling about the Mets, man. I don't know. I got a feeling.
So, I mean, if you want to, you could take the Braves at plus 110 and the Mets at plus 150. It's not the worst bet in the world. I don't love it. But, I mean, you could do it and try and break even on those two. The Nationals, again, plus 625, sneaky team.
And Soto could be the MVP. So
Soto, again, I like Josh Bell. You have a good pitching staff with Scherzer, Corbin, and Strasburg. Give me the Nationals. I don't love this bet. Super small PP. Give me the Nationals plus 750 to win the NL East.
Boom. And then the West. Give me the Dodgers, right?
They're minus 250.
Yeah, it's the Dodgers, and I'm not buying the Padres.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, I think the Padres win the division, but I'm not taking the 175. There's no value there against the Dodgers. So, all right, that's where I'm going. That's where I'm going with the division. You know, fuck it, PP. Give me the Blue Jays plus 400 to win the division. I know it's a little short, but whatever, I'll live. If I hit one of those, I'll feel pretty good about it. All right, let's see. Let's move on to not the division winners. Let's move on to the pennant winners and the World Series, Joe. Who do you have winning the AL this year?
It's so square, but it's good for baseball. Give me the New York Yankees.
They're plus 250.
Oh, I like that.
You like that?
Yeah, and give me the Dodgers.
Oh, man. Okay. The Yankees are not winning the AL this year. Not going to happen. They're not good enough. The lineup's not good enough. I don't like it. Two teams I'm looking at to win the AL this year. I'm looking at Oakland plus 850.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm looking at Oakland plus 850, and I'm looking at those are the two teams I'm looking at to win the AL. If you want to nibble on those two,
who's the second team?
Toronto.
Oh wow! Oh, I love the A. I the A's are due. They're fucking due.
Yep. So the A's plus 850 is a bet I really like. The J's plus 900. The NL side, Joe. You like the Dodgers? They're plus 150. There's no value there. There's such little value in the NL, in my opinion. Because of that,
what about the Nationals at 3,000? Oh, that's that's the win it all.
The Nationals are at 22-1 to win it all. I don't hate that bet if you want to nibble on. Sorry, 22-1 to win the NL. I don't hate that bet. The Nets are also plus 650. The Braves are plus 600. Like, not the worst price in the world. There's nothing I'm going to take in the NL. Who is your World Series winner, Joe Murray?
Square. The Dodgers, I have plus 300. What do you see that?
Yep, I have plus 280 here. So we can call plus 280, plus 300.
It's so square, but they're loaded. They're loaded.
Yep. Give me you're gonna love this, Joe. Give me Oakland +2700 to win the World Series. I like them. I think they have a good pitching staff. They have an elite lineup, in my opinion. I think if they make one or two additions, they're right there. And I think the value is there too. And I want to be consistent and say Toronto. I just don't want to take too many people. I have no idea what that's talking about. You don't look anything like Beetle.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I look like I ate Beetle.
I'm going to say just straight up, I'm going to take the Oakland A's versus the San Diego Padres in the World Series.
Woo!
And I'm going to take Oakland to win it all.
I'll tell you, though, if you could get, just for funsies, the Padres versus the Blue Jays in the World Series, that would get people involved.
I think it would too. You'd have exciting teams from both sides. Let's see what that pays. The Padres Blue Jays matchup. I'm trying to see if I can find that. Padres Blue Jays pays +8200.
Holy shit.
82-1. So not the worst bet you've ever made. Not the worst one. Not playing it, obviously. Just saying if you want to discuss it. So, all right. Joe, that's what I got in baseball. If you're looking for player props, because I've been asked about individual player props, let me list a few guys who I'm high on this year. Okay. Matt Olson of the A's. I like Matt Olson. I think Matt Olson's going to have a massive season this year. Okay. I'm very high on what he's going to do and what he's going to, and his numbers there. Bryce Harper, I'm high on what he's going to do this year. I am down, very down, Joe, on everyone's boy, Ronald Acuna. I'm going to be taking some unders on Mr. Acuna this year. That's not what I'm looking to bet on. But I do like those guys. I'm on the over of Pete Alonso. I like Pete Alonso this year. I've talked about Chris Paddock. I like me some Paddock. So those are some guys. If you have some more questions, you can feel free to DM me. I'll be glad to answer you and let you know if there's a few guys I like. By the way, Joe, I want to let you know I am getting pounded right now, just pounded with people who are talking about Cam Newton being the quarterback and how much they love Cam Newton as the quarterback. I think we should save this for Saturday, but you got to be fucking kidding me, right? Really? Cam Newton? Can we relax on this now? We saw Cam Newton last year. Let's relax on this, really. So we'll save that for Saturday. But that's all I got.
Ain't nobody got time for that right now.
I think we can make a time.
I think the lights went out on your end.
Yes, they did.
Starting to fade on my end here. So we have a 5-2 basketball game at the 15-minute mark, Dan. So the under is looking good.
Nice.
So far.
Nice.
And Silva is getting beat up down low for Oregon State. So that's
good. It's gonna be tough for Oregon State to play like they have versus Houston, man. It's gonna be very tough.
I wish that was a part of my analysis. But he's too slow and he's going to get beat up and whatever. All right, Dan. Well, you know what? We left it all on the table today with our 13 remaining viewers. Thank you for watching live. Are we back Thursday or no? Well, just Saturday. We're back on Thursday.
I believe we're no podcast on Thursday. We'll do our show Saturday.
All right. And maybe we'll do a special Monday national championship.
That's my feeling. We do a Monday podcast, and we'll just do a couple of Mondays, and maybe take a week off from baseball.
All right. Well, people, they love the way that we end the show, so we will do that. This has been another edition of the Over Under 98.5 podcast.
Who you got?
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.